This is Lena Live. I'm Lena Mirmond. And I like to invite all of you for a particularly very fascinating discussion, which would have to do with the issue of gravity. We had many programs which had to do with health issues, with stress, with some specific diseases, and endlessly I was talking about a very poor statistic of American health. And particularly, it's becoming very challenging and troublesome because of the issues with the healthcare. It is hard to find more unique and more exciting conversation than we will have with Dr. John Vernikos. She is a pioneer in a medical field which has to do with the medicine of space, which has to do with inactivity physiology, which also has to do with stress and health aging, but mostly it all will be connected with gravity, something which doesn't have a color, doesn't have a smell, we cannot see it in any shape, but we feel it every second, just like we're breathing. So today we will discover those golden, fantastic qualities and features which are hidden in gravity. And hopefully by the end of this conversation, we will feel healthier, we will be more motivated, and we will know what to do with our lives, having at the side fantastic book which Dr. Vernikos wrote about gravity, which has name Sitting Kills, Moving Heals. We certainly will talk about the book, we will talk about points about the book, but now it's my absolute distinct pleasure to invite to our conversation Dr. John Vernikos. How are you and welcome.
Thank you very much, and I'm delighted to be on the other end of the line and to have the opportunity to chat with you. So many interviews are short and you hardly have time to take a breath from sentence to sentence, and this is lovely and a very, very good idea of how to explore ideas further, because you get to learn much more about what goes behind what we do as individuals, as scientists, or as philosophers, or whatever we happen to be involved in.
So, absolutely. The pleasure is ours, and actually we are already grateful because the preliminary discussion and sharings which I had regarding your book were so enriching and so fulfilling with the new knowledge. What truly shocked me, how natural and almost simple to take benefits of gravity. We'll be discussing starting in a few seconds, the fact that you can use it without going to fancy gyms, without going into some kind of elaborate expenses. It's right here, it's hugging you every second. And on this thought, perhaps the first thing I will ask you to describe this tremendous excitement when Senator John Glenn, who is an astronaut, walked into your room.
And oh, it was so exciting because it's something I didn't expect. And not only that, but he told me he wanted to fly again, go into space again.
And he was not a young man anymore.
Well, he was 77.
Well, for him, it's a young man.
Yeah, exactly. but he always wanted to go back into space, and he didn't, after his original orbiting of the Earth, and was declared a hero with a hero's welcome and ticker tape parade in New York, he President Kennedy was worried about sending him back into space because he was a hero and he couldn't afford to have an accident because the impact, he thought, would be tremendous. So John Glenn, who was hoping after his flight to be able to go to the moon, never had the chance to do so. Mm-hmm. And so he left the space program. And as we all know, he eventually became a politician, one of the honest ones, if I can say that.
Yes, this is a wonderful extension in your comments, especially because you knew him so well.
Exactly. And he was approachable. And it so happened that while he was in the Senate, he became the chair of the Committee on Aging.
Yes.
And as he told me, he would listen to all these people come and testify about the work they were doing and what they were seeing with the elderly people around and the problems with nursing homes or whatever they're called today, assisted living. And generally the difficult time that older people in America were having, and as well as the medicine and the medical people who came to speak before him. And he said that what intrigued him was that a lot of what they talked about was familiar to him. And it was familiar to him because he remembered that as an astronaut, he experienced changes, and he knew of subsequent missions when other astronauts stayed longer in space, that they described a set of symptoms, a set of changes that were very similar to what he was hearing in his Committee on Aging.
Hmm.
And so he decided that he was going to take a textbook on space medicine and a book called The Physician's Desk Reference, which is kind of a standard reference for physicians.
Yes.
And go through the index item by item. And he did it himself. He didn't have a staff member do it. He actually did it himself. And to say, for instance, bone, and, you know, what happens to bone when you're older? What happens to astronauts' bone when you're in space? Muscle, what happens? And so on, cardiovascular system, immune system, whatever. Everything you can, you know, he just went through the entire index. And much to his amazement, the symptoms that they were describing with the elderly were very much the same as what had been identified in astronauts in space. And so he became even more intrigued and interested that there was a lot of research, a lot of knowledge that could be gained from space that had to do with aging.
And this is such a philosophical dimension because, in a sense, it's a union of opposites, my, so to speak, favorite dilemma, and very logical and natural system of connection, something which is disconnect. We cannot imagine further connection between Earth and space, and yet space is becoming the answer for the Earth. And I have to tell you that you described this with such a transparent beauty. And it is so fascinating that it opens another dimension about the space, because there is no secret. People are questioning why we have to go in space when we have so many problems on Earth and etc. But this is a real, unavoidable, relevant truth, tremendous help, maybe even salvation for so many.
Well, I feel that way. I'm a bit of what can I call it? A pioneer and a preacher when it comes to explaining to people that the real value of space, as far as I'm concerned, is educating us and telling us and letting us discover how we live or should live and here on Earth. Because going into space, there is no zero gravity. There's no such thing as zero gravity, but there is much reduced gravity. We call it microgravity. As the spacecraft tumbles around the Earth,
yes,
they experience fractional, mm-hmm. 10 to the minus 5, fractional gravity. So in essence, you have mass, but you have no weight.
Yes.
And you've seen astronauts, and they look like they're having a good time floating around in a spacecraft. And now they're staying on the space station for up to 6 months, and they're getting a lot of information on their physiology and medical issues. But coming back to Glenn, when he eventually was decided that he was going to fly in space again, I did a lot of public speaking. I had to go out and speak to anyone who would listen to me about why we were doing this. Why would we let a 77-year-old go back into space?
If I can interject one thing, he actually, if not insist, but he made a very strong proposal to you if he would be part of your research, if it will be step-by-step analysis and going into your understanding and your pioneer work on all this level, physiological and also health and stress wise, and then in the future we will be talking about this restoration process, which you described so graphically clear. I would like you to go on, but I just wanted to make it very clear that I was very impressed by the fact that he insists upon following all your step-by-step science.
Oh, absolutely. He worked very, very hard because he was still at the Senate while he was training with all the other astronauts who were going to go with him. Just like, I mean, he did not want any special favors. He wanted to be trained like the astronaut, and he wanted to conduct experiments on others and on himself. And so it was extremely important to him that there were no exceptions made.
Yes.
And he was really outstanding. But you can imagine that from the press, thought, oh well, you know, he's a politician. That's why he's getting.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And we had the job of showing that we were going to get scientific value by having a 77-year-old go into space, and especially this 77-year-old who had experienced space before.
Yes.
And who could tell us, with the background and the knowledge he had, who could look and ask questions while he was there of himself and of his body.
Frankly, you just made me think that indeed, because he was a politician, obviously he could use his position and his influence. None of this coming across in your book.
It didn't at all.
It was not a factor.
Yes,
but we had to talk and discuss and argue with a lot of people, mm-hmm. that we are letting him fly. We wanted him to fly for scientific reasons.
Yes,
and when the results came back, was I worried about his going into space again? I was not worried about going into space. I was worried about his ability to recover, mm-hmm. afterwards.
And you just predicted my thought, because in your book, when I will let you to explain this, that was very intriguing, extremely fascinating, that age is not a factor. It's a gravity, which is, and I will let you to explain this.
Yes, this takes us into the theory I had come across, or the observation I had come across, about the similarity of the changes in space and aging. And the question was, when astronauts return, they recover.
Yes.
But we have, we think, we clever people think, believe, we presume that as we age, we don't recover from this thing called aging.
Exactly, yes.
And the only way I could explain, because people would say, well, this is similar, but it's not the same. And I thought, well, the only way I can explain this is if I turn the question around. Instead of saying, do astronauts recover from space, and therefore it's different from the people I was testing on the ground who were lying in bed, and I'll come to that in a second, to mimic the effects of being in space, but also the astronauts in space. Maybe the question should be, perhaps what we see with aging is not irreversible. And when I started with that question, and then things started falling into place. Today, the astronauts who have been in space for 6 months have a very hard time recovering.
Mm-hmm.
So today, and the data from astronauts in space, say, on bone loss or muscle loss, are 10 to 20 times faster in space than they are on the ground. So there is an aging-like process going on in space in very little time.
Yes.
Much, much faster than it happens to us on Earth as we age normally.
Yes.
So when you remove gravity completely, it actually accelerates aging.
Yes, that's...
So it's a question of not so much having, you either have no gravity or little gravity, or you don't use gravity. And that was my conclusion from the observations I had, because how could you explain when we have gravity all around us that we are not responding to gravity? We think of gravity as the enemy that drags us down, but actually it's our friend if we use it, if we respect it, and if we use it.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what, indeed, you so, as I said before, graphically expressed in your book. And it's beautifully written because it is very well organized. In fact, if I can jump just for 1 second, I believe it will bring even more more clarity in our conversation. I liked very much your health assets questionnaire. This is, and that's what really made me think that if someone would not read anything about the health, but just read that, it is mind-opening because you're becoming your self, very assertive healer. Because you're totally aware of what's going on. In fact, those questionnaire which you, the questions which you put on those pages are so comprehensive. I wouldn't find many of those with the books where more specific medical issues would be described. So,
well, they're not the kind of questions, unfortunately, that your doctor asks you.
Oh, that's another country.
And it is unfortunate because how, and they're not things you spontaneously think of writing down, you know, in that form they give you when you first go to see your doctor. Then they ask you for a history.
Yes.
They ask you generally, you know, if you smoke, if you drink, if you exercise or whatever. But they don't. You don't understand why you're being asked that question and how you do it, how much you do it, or whether you do it at all makes a difference and will make a difference to anything that the doctor's going to diagnose. Your history is terribly important, and poor doctors these days don't have the time to ask these questions.
They don't have time, but also I think there is no emphasis in the medical school. It's still extremely conservative, and it doesn't really widen its horizon to new science like your own?
Well, you know,
no.
I've taught medical students, and so I know how they think. But today's medical students are very different from even the ones that I taught, because a doctor is trained to rely. You know, you go and see a doctor, and you see a nurse assistant, and they're very good. I don't underestimate them. They're very good. But you see a nurse assistant, you don't see the doctor for a while. And they order a whole bunch of tests, an MRI, a scan, or whatever, analyses, blood tests, and so on, before you even start. Then the doctor sees all the results of the tests. And then they look at you. And they say, well, what's your problem? And you have one problem to complain about. But that may not be the cause of why you're there. You may have another thing that is really impacting your causing your problem. And they don't touch you. They don't diagnose you by looking at you, asking you questions, examining you, unless they absolutely have to. Most of the time, they don't examine anymore. They look at all the lab tests and all the scans and MRIs. And
yes, it's almost calculated, technical, computerized
technology.
Approach.
It's the technology.
And
yeah.
I was truly captivated by aspects of your book, and I like to perhaps go into some chapters, some thoughts, which indeed goes very deep into the physiology and the actual use of your facilities as a, in fact, as a human mechanism, not computerized mechanism. And if you do not mind, can we talk about gravity deprivation syndrome? This is chapter number 2. I'm skipping chapter number 1, not because I'm a bad student, frankly. I like to go back to chapter 1, but since we already touched upon gravity a little bit, I like to go into deprivation of gravity and to see certain aspects which you described, which manifest that.
Let me try and put it succinctly. When a baby is born, it is born from the relative low gravity, almost no gravity, of the womb, of the uterus.
I see.
It is in water, in fluid.
It's very true, yes.
So it has never experienced gravity until it is born.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Mm-hmm. And it has to learn to live in gravity, because that's where it's going to live, on Earth.
Yes.
And the first thing, and it can't hold its head up, because its head is suddenly heavy, and the muscles in the back of the neck have not developed.
Yes.
And it is helpless.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it has to, its body has to become adjusted to having the blood circulate against the force of gravity.
Mm-hmm.
If you hold the baby up, with the head up, the blood will go to the feet, and it could faint. Which is something that is not really, you know, in the old days when they used to go to the fields and have their children, they knew what they were doing intuitively. But anyway, so the child, the baby, learns how to live in gravity. And it learns how to live in gravity intuitively without anybody telling it or training it by playing. Okay?
Yes.
We call it play.
Yes, yes.
And it has fun, and it jumps, and it runs, and it stands upside down, and it leans, and it bends, and it squats, and it hops, and it swings, and all the things a child does. And what the child is doing by playing is using gravity maximally, optimally, so that it can grow and develop.
And the more probably child developing, I think that's, I'm sure it's the thought came to me because I read this in your book. There is a certain logical, almost like a developing personal relationship with the gravity. The more you develop, the more you can take benefits from it. That's almost feedback I had reading about certain quality connection between the body and the gravity.
Absolutely, because the child needs gravity to use gravity to develop and to grow until it becomes, it reaches peak development and the bones have grown to the maximum length and the muscles are strong and it's a big, big strapping child. Big young person, young man or young woman. Say
yes.
Around 20.
Yes.
Say around 20, 20, 25, you know, depends. It depends on how good the childhood has been. If it's malnourished or in a poor social environment, it won't develop as well. If it is in a wonderfully active, healthy environment, it will develop better. That sort of stands to reason. But it is using gravity intuitively, moving in the vector, we call it the vector, the direction of gravity, which is only one way, only downwards to the center of the Earth. The force is just one, single, downward to the center of the Earth. It's how we rotate around it, how we use it, how we turn our body, our head, our arms, in around this, like a rod going to the center of the Earth, that has the beneficial effect on our body.
And you're talking about gravipose. Could you comment on that? That's a very intricate word.
Well, everyone knows about menopause.
I was trying to be polite. But obviously I couldn't escape the thinking this way. But when I read this, I said, well, would I connect this in some kind of way? But I decided to let you connect this, if
Thank
it
you.
Is all connectable.
Basically, it's pausing, stopping,
yes.
Using gravity. So once the child is roughly 18, 20 years old and it goes to university or it doesn't go to university or goes to work, or it gets married, or whatever it does, an adult child does, you gradually stop playing. You stop playing and you stop using gravity to its maximum, like you did as a child growing up. And that's why I called it gravity pause, because from that point on, we use gravity less and less and less into old age.
And
that's the outcome.
And that's where it is a critical point to stay active and almost to use gravity on a conscious level.
Exactly.
I found a beautiful logic in your book because you are creating almost like in music we would say a very logical ABA form. With the introduction of all points, then there is a development where you giving all these avenues a map and a web of gravity interaction, and then the conclusion, indeed, how we can benefit and how much we will be truly happy about ourselves if we will be part of that most natural, powerful phenomena. I have to thank you for making such a lovely front page of your book, because this comfortable chair suggests a lovely meditation before moving heels. I found it's very elegantly done, discreet, and that heel which is walking away from this chair suggests that this chair is wonderful to come back to, but not to spend the rest of your life.
Exactly. And the research has, there's been a lot of research done, mostly around diabetes and the metabolism.
Yes.
But it doesn't matter what it is you measure. Every part of the body responds to gravity. Every part of the body, I have come to that conclusion, every cell in the body is affected by gravity. And when you stop and think about it, gravity, as you move, pulls you, pulls every cell, every which way, pulls the fluids. The fluids are swishing around in the body as you move. If you don't move and you sit, they won't swish around. Well, guess what? We have now discovered, in fact, the Nobel Prize was awarded some years ago for this one discovery in one particular case. But now it's shown that it's throughout the body. As fluid, and we are made of 90% fluid, we think we're something, 90% fluid that is swishing around in this bag of skin.
Yes.
And it's swishing around because of gravity.
Yes.
Because we're moving in the gravity vector. Now, as things swish around, whether it's fluid swishing in a cell or fluid is swishing in a blood vessel, okay?
Yes.
Or there are tubes in the bone called trabeculae, that they're bony tubes that have a fluid in them that also swishes, okay? And if you have in the inner ear that perceives gravity, in the vestibular system of the inner ear, you have cells that have little hairs at the top. They're called hair cells.
Yes.
And yes. They're surrounded by a fluid. And as you move your head, the fluid swishes and bends the hair cells, the hairs. And the bending of the hairs sent a message through the vestibular system to the periphery that, gosh, you've moved in a particular direction. You've moved forward. You've gone sideways. You've turned your head. And that is how gravity is perceived by the inner, by these little hairs that are moved by the fluid that swishes around. And we call the swishing shear forces. As the fluid swishes in say the blood vessel, it creates shear. It grates against the capillary wall, the wall of the blood vessel. When it does that, it produces a chemical called nitric oxide.
Yes.
Nitric oxide is a very common chemical.
Yeah.
But it's found to have very beneficial effects in terms of the integrity and the growth of the muscles of the blood vessel or of the bone, generate remodeling bone, forming new bone, or throughout the body, in the cells, how each cell communicates with another cell, in the immune system, everything. And this nitric oxide appears to be part of all the systems, and the response is made as a result of these shear forces generated by fluid that's swishing around in our body. Now, if you sit in a chair, there's not going to be any swishing.
Yes. Stagnation.
Okay? Now, if you are sitting in a chair, you're not using gravity. Okay? You're not moving.
Yes.
You're not moving your head. You're not standing up in the line of gravity. You're not squatting down like people in other countries squat all the time to sit, to eat, to talk.
Yes.
With others. Mm-hmm. You sit in a chair, or you sit in the most comfortable chair, which means you are not even sitting upright.
Yes, very, very, very true. You're glued to the chair, basically.
Yeah, that's right. And the chairs are designed to make life easier.
Absolutely.
What does that mean? It means tragic, because an easy chair means that your spine is bent, your head is bent forward, your head is heavy. And I see these children now are using bent over a text messaging phone all day long. How are they going to grow and develop normal?
Yeah,
they're not sitting upright.
I call it a hook position.
That's very good.
Yeah.
That's very good. That's exactly what it is. But the head is heavy. It means that you're not developing the muscles that hold the head up. You're not developing the muscles that support the spine. This child is going to have back pain, guaranteed, at least. And we have no idea how these children will develop. I watch ladies walk. I think it's wonderful that they're walking past my window. They're all looking at their feet.
Yes.
Their heads are bent forward.
Very true. Yes.
I mean, we do not, as a child, I remember at school, posture was a big thing. Well, I don't have fantastic posture. I wish I did. I did as a child. But I'm learning now that sitting in front of a computer can be deadly.
And you bring in that point, which made me think of two other points. One is, and you will correct me pronouncing it properly, with age, the issue with vestibular balance becoming very, very critical. There is no secret that the older people have issues with this. They fall so easily. And there is a very wrong notion in this country regarding the bone loss, that if you take calcium and if you take those pills in this extraordinarily
large,
is so, actually it's very damaging. That's a bit of a different conversation because calcium tends to go where it doesn't need to be. But what you're saying is so profoundly important because it makes one realize why the impact of weight and training, even in a very modest level, a modest scale, is so beneficial. I frankly, it hit me so strongly when I was reading your book, particularly, I believe it was one chapter which you described about importance of having those daily routine of exercise and moving, that makes so much sense. It's not that you just do this for muscles or doing for some kind of athletic purpose. That is a survival tool. It's a protect your body from deterioration. So this idea in my mind was very well connected between the weight which I will endure with the connection of the gravity, which almost will thank me for making that connection between the weight and the gravity. I found this so fascinating.
Yes, absolutely. And it's a very important factor because that you bring up with the elderly and the balance issues. I'll tell you a story. There's a very good, excellent balance expert at the University of Oregon called Owen Black.
Mm-hmm.
And he was looking at measuring balance as a function of age. So he had groups of people who were 20, 30, 40, 60, 80, okay?
Yes.
And sure enough, he saw that balance deteriorated very rapidly. In fact, it's probably the first thing that goes, and it goes at 20. It starts going at 20, not at 60. As one of the interviewers once said to me, "Oh," he says, "the slippery slope starts at 20." I said, "You're right. The slippery slope does not wait till 60." But it starts at 20, right after peak development. Anyway, so he was doing that, and then suddenly he comes to the 80-year-olds, and balance improved.
Huh.
And he thought, you know, how could that be?
Yeah.
I mean, how could that be? And then you know, he started asking the questions of himself again, and how could that be, how could that be? Well, what happened is he took groups of people.
Yes.
The people who were 80 were 80 because their balance was better.
That's extraordinary.
Okay?
Truly extraordinary.
And that's why they lived longer. And it wasn't a function of, you know, that, yeah, as you get older, your balance improves, which, you know, is a different way of interpreting the data.
Yes.
That was his first conclusion.
Yes.
And he finally figured out that the, what he saw in the people who were 80 and 90, where the balance was better, it was because it was better that they were living longer.
That is truly, truly extraordinary.
And it brings around the whole discussion to how important using gravity is, because they used gravity to maintain their balance, because that is the main factor of using gravity, balance and coordination. And it goes very quickly if we don't stand up, if we don't move around. And we have to keep stimulating this brain organ, the vestibular system, that perceives gravity and responds to gravity and sends the messages down to the muscle and the bone and the cardiovascular system, etc., to respond. So if you sit, or if you go into space, or if you lie in bed, your brain central control, balance control, is silent. Goes silent. When it goes silent, there is no response in the periphery. And there's recent research last year that if there's damage in the inner ear, you lose bone, you lose muscle, you atrophy, your immune system goes to pieces, and your body, in fact, shuts down. So, because the question people were asking me when I went to talk is, how does sitting kill? Okay? Well, you can say, you know, you lose muscle and you lose bone. But sitting kills because you're not allowing the gravity signals.
Yes. Absolutely.
Because you're not moving, you're not allowing the gravity signals to tune. You know, that's a word that's familiar to you. It is a tuning process.
Absolutely.
And you need to be intermittently and constantly and frequently tuning the system, all systems, but especially the brain systems, so that when you need them, they are able to respond.
And going into even more of a language which I'm familiar, body needs to modulate constantly. And this is the secret. And I believe that your science becoming now that much more relevant today than it was even 10 years ago, because this technology, even though might moving our brain faster, but it certainly makes our body so sedentary and so immovable that lifespan can be so much shorter with all of facilities and all advancements we have. I'd like to talk a little bit about you as a person, and who is this such a talented, outstanding scientist is. I mean, I know that you have very exotic bringing up because you've been born in Egypt, and then you been...
My parents were Greek.
Oh, your parents are... My goodness, what a color. You have your own gravity there.
Oh, yes. My parents were Greek. My father was a doctor.
Uh-huh.
And he was 60 when I was born.
Wow.
And so I was very lucky because he was really an old-time doctor.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
He was known for being a fantastic diagnostician.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why diagnostics is so interesting to me. And his hands were incredible. You know, he just put his hands down. You know, now they talk about energy and hands and so on.
Yes.
You know, he used to palpitate and examine somebody, and he was fantastic at diagnosing. No lab tests, no MRIs, no, you know. So what did we do? People lived a good long life. Okay, so there are modern ways of replacing organs and extending life, and yes, antiseptics have done, and antibiotics have done wonders in keeping us live longer. But, you know, people did not die that young. I mean, there were old people around, and it was wonderful growing up with real old people around, my grandmother, my aunts, who were active and moving all day long.
And
they would move all day long as part of living. I mean, they wouldn't think of sitting down. I mean, we had radio. It was, television didn't come on till later. But parents and grandparents and great-grandparents moved all day long in the course of living.
And I found my own answer in one sense. Just one little comment, and then we will be coming to your groundbreaking medical studies. I always would ask my question, the same questions. My grandmother was not an athlete. She was not really the person who would be specifically pro-exercise. She was a musician, but she was, both of my grandparents actually, being way after 90s. But exactly for the reason you've been talking about, it was non-strenuous, but it was moving, and it was much more natural life to go about different things. It was somewhat scheduling in life, even though, of course, they've been living in the most difficult time, Second World War, then other dictatorial regime policies, yet their physiology was moving. And reading your book, I understood that this is the answer, that you're not looking for any kind of extraordinarily complicated issues. However, I would say that it is your tremendous talent, tremendous vision, that you could connect and could discover and to be such a powerful pioneer of this science. So studying pharmacology, how did you make connection with the NASA center? You've been their director for 30 years, if I'm not mistaken.
I was director for 10 years, but I was doing research with NASA for over 30 years, yes. And as I know you noticed, my background was in stress research, how the brain regulates the response to stress and how we cope and what is involved in terms of hormones and the body's reaction to stress. And one of these days, just to divert here a bit, I'm going to come back to it because write a book on stress again, because that's my field, and because I'm sure, and I never thought of it that way, I'm sure gravity has a role to play in the stress response as well. Okay, let's go back to my background.
Your background, however, the world is waiting for your new book, because such an enormous promise and result you got with not only with this book, but with the research and with this tremendous connection and realization what we need for our life and survival. This book, which will be more focused on the brain function and stress, I think will be sharply relevant and so strongly anticipated. But coming back, yes, indeed, to your research, your life in NASA, I just wanted to be proper and to tell our listeners that you've been twice winner of NASA Exceptional Leadership Award, among many other numerous awards.
Thank you, you're very kind.
And also, you made people think, and Senator John Glenn certainly was one of the powerful instrument, but you worked with other people, and you had certain group of scientists around you. Maybe you can tell us about that.
I always collaborated with a lot of people. I enjoyed collaboration, and I thought it was important that not to work alone, because then you don't learn, you don't expand, you don't stretch your horizons. And I want to reinforce the point here that I have not done anything sensational. What I'm talking about and what I noticed is common sense. Everybody can think about it. I mean, I didn't discover anything extraordinary. I just was fortunate that I happened to be at NASA at a time when it was really at its peak. And we were looking at very basic things. What would happen to a human being if they went into space? And the person who went to start the laboratories in California, the NASA laboratories, because they were not in Houston or Kennedy at the time. The Congress decided they should be in California, near Stanford University. He asked me if I would go with him, because he was looking for one person who worked in biological rhythms and one person who worked in metabolism and one person who worked in stress. And he asked me if I would go with him. And I thought, of course, you put a human being on top of a rocket and it has to be stressful, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And so I went to California and started continuing my research there and my colleagues at Stanford, and it was wonderful. And then we had the first time, Gemini 7 in 1966, Gemini 7 were two astronauts, and it was the first time that we could actually collect any urine and do any kind of medical studies. And the samples came back, and we analyzed them, and my goodness, not only was there no stress, but it was much lower than at any other time while they were up there in flight.
Fascinating.
And I thought, well, this is the end of a beautiful career. Here I am at NASA. I came to study stress, and there's no stress. And this was...
Non-stress created stress in your mind.
And that's why I say, you know, gravity plays a role, because there they were in space for 14 days. And the data are as clear as could be in each one of them. It's extremely, extremely low. Yes, it was high before, and it was higher afterwards when they landed. But while they were in space, it was very low. Now, we have had very high stress responses in astronauts since then. And certainly in the ones that are staying six months on the space station. So it's not like they are stress-free.
Yes.
It is not due to gravity. And then I went back and looked at the data, and we had done everything right, and the data were true. And this only way I could explain them was that those people who were astronauts then had been in war, had flown, or test pilots, had flown missions, dropped bombs, and going into space was what they wanted to do, and for them it was fun. It was not stress.
Yes.
This is what they always wanted to do.
Yes.
And so it's how you perceive a situation. that really affects whether your body reacts in an adverse way, or it, in fact, enjoys the experience. So if you asked me to play the piano, I would be terrified.
No, you would not, because of one little comment. It's interesting you read my mind, because I wanted to tell you that one of the most natural technique is the technique when the musician feels that he or she using gravity. In fact, one of my wonderful professors who passed away, in fact, you know, she was 96. She taught the most physiological plane and most natural plane. And she used to say, you should feel that piano plays your hands, that you're almost leaning. It should be effortless. And in fact, when I was reading again one of the chapters, it was just so crystal clear to me. My goodness, I'm teaching the same thing. It's not a work, it's a gravity. And what you just said, and thank you for making this connection, because indeed, if you are placing yourself on a chair and you feel that your body fully connected and not, and you're not playing like some old-fashioned Eastern European school when the fingers are moving and the hands are very stiff, supposedly in organized position. This is frankly an old school, and it's not quite physiologically correct. That's why people had a lot of issues with pain in their hands and their arms, because indeed the level of gravity was deprived, because the gravity benefits would take its fullest effect if a musician would feel that between his hands, fingers, his torso, and the feet, there is no really disconnection. It's like a one whole body, almost inseparable from the keyboard. Continuum, exactly. So I'm glad that you brought this up, because it goes so way beyond just that fantastic science and recommendations which are in your book. It goes to special activities.
It goes down to understanding our universe, because
yes,
gravity is what keeps the planets and the Earth and the Moon and everything together.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go down to the basics, there we have night and we have day.
Yes.
And when it's night, we lie down to sleep.
Yes.
And when we wake up, we get up. And
yes,
when we are up, we are supposed to move. You know, we get up and we do things in the course of living, in order to find food, in order to build your house, in order to whatever, you know, fundamental things. And today it's a little different, so we go to work and whatever else we do. So, but at night we lie down horizontal, which is minimizing the influence of gravity, which is what we use in healthy volunteers to study the effects of being in space. We call it bed rest. That's lying in bed continuously, except we have people lying in bed continuously day and night, okay? But
yes,
normally, you have light and you have darkness, and because of that, you have day and you have night, and because of that, you are up in the vertical, in the full influence of gravity, or you are lying down, minimizing the influence of gravity because it's only going through your chest. So it is a very basic thing that happens, that we do, we all do, and that's how we start. And we change the influence of gravity by lying down and standing up. So standing up is the most basic movement we can make. Is it exercise? No. We do it all the time. We squat. Is that exercise? Today it might be. But, you know, it's a natural way of...
of reaching for things.
Exactly. You stretch up to pick up something off a shelf. You bend down to pick up something off the floor. These are all natural movements. The main thing to remember is that you have to move. We are made, we're designed to move all day long. If you exercise, people who are very fit and exercise once a day and sit the rest of the time, they are unhealthy.
Yes, that's another realization I came across reading your book. And perhaps coming to our final moments, I wanted to ask you if you just can mention to our listeners, you're talking about 8 fundamentals of G-effective activity. If not 8, at least whatever would you suggest, but if you can talk about 8, that would be appreciated too.
Okay. First of all, must remember that if you are aligned with the direction of gravity, that is the most restful thing to your body. And when you change position from lying down to standing up or sitting down to standing up, the posture change signal is what triggers your inner ear and says, aha, you know, get all the peripheral organs moving.
Yes.
But you are responding, you are creating energy, your muscles are stimulating, you're burning sugar, you're burning fat, your circulation is going around, your heart is pumping, your heart rate is increased, your temperature is increased. Okay, that's the main thing, align yourself with gravity. The other is all day, not once a day, all day long, throughout the day, on and off throughout the day. Very basically, stand up every 20 or 30 minutes, every 10 minutes. Look at a child. Be a child, number 3. Be a child again.
Be a child. Wonderful thing.
Watch a child. Remember, not that far ago, be a child.
Yes, yes.
Move, including weekends. The body doesn't know when it's got to stop moving and you sit for 24 hours on a weekend. So you, and the stimulus has to be intermittent and varied. So you're not doing the same activity. You're not only standing up. You are standing up and stretching. You're bending over. You're stirring a pot of Sophia Loren's favorite pasta sauce. Whatever it is you're doing, you're cooking, you're cleaning, you're making the beds. Whatever it is, you're gardening, which is wonderful, especially now that we have better weather. You're gardening, you're seeing things grow. These are the kinds of activities. So, all day, every day, throughout the day, including weekends. Diversity, intermittent, and fun. Do you know that gravity is at the root of all the fun activities we do?
Now we are all realizing this.
Roller coaster, yes. Riding all the fun parks, roller coaster, merry-go-rounds, swinging on the swing.
Yeah, that's true.
A skipping rope, yeah. Motorbike, sports car, sailing, skydiving. I mean, you name it. All the things we consider fun, all the things we consider fun have a gravity element in them. It's acceleration, it's control, it's gravity. I mean, even driving your car can be part of that. Flying in an airplane, I mean, but they all have a fun element. So gravity is at the root of the fun we have. So, yes, be a child again, play.
That is a wonderful, picturesque image. And someone said that not believing in force is the same as not believing in gravity.
Yes.
So, Dr. Vernikos, I wanted to thank you very much. That was a revelation. Couldn't be better timing because the world we're living in. Because we cannot allow that technology will take place of gravity in our life. And I wanted to thank you for giving this fantastic panoramic view, as I would say. And I hope that we will be in touch. And I hope that once you or another book will be on, we will have another wonderful discussion. But meanwhile, I will urge everyone to get this book, which called Sitting Kills and Moving Heals, written by outstanding scientist Dr. John Vernikos, who found the time in her very hectic schedule to share with us the importance of gravity, that it is virtually our salvation, our pleasure, and our way of moving. Dr. Vernikos, thank you so much, and I wish you absolutely the best in next chapter in your book, and have your own satisfaction in sharing your science with all of us.
Thank you so very, very much for having me on this wonderful interview. I enjoyed talking with you immensely, and I really appreciate being with you.
Well, thank you. It's very, very mutual. I'm planning to get even closer look to this book because, as I said, it leads to much deeper understanding of physiological connections in our body. And with age, it becomes even more profound. And for that particularly, I'm very, very thankful. Until next time, I wanted to wish all of you to move and to have Sitting Kills and Moving Heals book as your just fantastic inspiration. It's beautifully written clearly. It is more than helpful. And indeed, it is a best recommendation for your health. That was another edition of Lena Life. I'm Lena Mirmont. Until next time.
Thank you.